Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Last night, the presidential debate got a high-tech shot in the arm as YouTube videos of fiery citizens were put right in the face of candidates.
I'm wondering, since this is such a revolutionary debate, that if you as politicians can do something revolutionary, and that is to actually answer the questions that are posed to you tonight versus beating around the bush.
Lots of talk back from average folks to the likes of Barack, Hillary, and John. All of it against the backdrop of a campaign that has become very plugged in. Candidates are mobbing the web. It's not just fundraising now. It's branding and networking and mobilizing. Old, creaky, wooden campaign platforms giving way to cyber stumps. Up next, On Point, the role of technology and the web in the 2008 YouTube election. Joining me now from Washington is Julie Barco-Germany, Deputy Director of George Washington University's Institute for Politics, Democracy, and the Internet. Julie, so glad you're with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, Senior Editor at The Atlantic Monthly. Jack, great to have you as well.
Hi, Julie. Hi, Jane.
So, Julie, let me start with you. You've watched many traditional presidential debates. What'd you think of the one last night?
It was certainly interesting, and it was certainly new. A lot of people have been talking online about how they didn't think some of the questions were tough enough. I thought the questions were definitely tough enough. And while I didn't exactly feel any closer to the candidates themselves, I felt a lot closer to my fellow Americans. We talk a lot about how web video is a more intimate medium than, say, broadcast television or radio. And I think in this case, being able to see people asking real questions and looking like real Americans gave a sense of intimacy to the debate.
Jack, lots of questions asked whether they were tough or not. Who cut through? How were the answers?
Well, I think there was a gap there. The questions had a an insouciance and a spontaneity that was attractive, but the answers you just can't get these politicians in free form. I mean, I thought occasionally there were some funny moments where people reacted spontaneously to things, and that showed their wit. But I don't know that we elicited any new answers from these candidates with the questions. And also, you know, one of the downsides of this. Format is that there weren't follow-up questions, which even regular journalists don't do much of. But without doing that, you really allow the candidate to unspool the soundbite without challenging it, without saying, well, is this adequate? So I think that cross-examination element was missing.
Do these formats allow for the candidates to go back and forth, any format, the YouTube format, the traditional format? I mean, I know you were sort of expecting Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama to maybe go at it a little more. Jack.
Well, I was, and no, I don't think it does allow for that. I mean, you don't get as much of that as we all would like. But take the Obama Hillary situation. You know, the polls show her now commanding lead, 15 points, 20 points, and some. And it's been that way since Obama entered the race. He's got to move the dial, and he's got to differentiate himself from her. And his theme last night was special interest control politics. We can't do anything in Washington until we address that problem, until we, you know, sever ourselves from the special interest. Well, you know, he could have looked at Hillary and said, you know, when you were first lady, Elizabeth Warren of the Harvard Law School came to you and said, you know, this bankruptcy bill before Congress is going to hurt poor people. It's great for banks and bad for vulnerable people, single mothers, the elderly, people who have to declare medical bankruptcy. Tell Bill not to sign it. And she did, to her credit. She worked on him, and she said, this is for the banks. Mm. Well, then she's elected senator from New York, gets $150,000 from the banking industry, and votes for the same bill. Mm. Well, that's a kind of QED of the role of money in politics, exactly what Obama was talking about, and he didn't confront her on that, which makes me think that he's, I'm not sure, that he may not have the aggressive gene here.
Julie Germany, each candidate last night was allowed to play a video, to produce one. Some were very clearly produced for the YouTube set. Others were more traditional in nature. What struck you about those?
Well, you know, obviously some of the campaigns really get this YouTube style of video making. And some of them were very hilarious and quite cheeky. Others just look like the same old 30-second, 15-second broadcast TV ads. They might have had snappier music in the background, but the images and the point were still the same. I thought the funniest was Chris Dodds and the reference
the white
to
hair.
White hair.
Did the YouTube format change, do you think, or alter the way the candidates reacted or responded in any way? Did it help them or hurt them?
Well, I took a little different perspective going into this debate than Jack did. I wasn't quite looking for the candidates to debate themselves. I wanted the candidates to have more of that direct dialogue with the questioners and with the American people. You know, this was billed as the great open dialogue debate. And I didn't see as much of that as I wanted. I saw a little bit of arguing back and forth. I saw a lot of arguing with Anderson Cooper over how many minutes each of the candidates had left. I wanted to see slightly more interactivity and slightly more discussion.
Last night's debate featured some heart-wrenching personal stories, and those stories usually led to a question of what can you do to help me or how can you help me and my family. Here's one healthcare-related YouTube video put to the candidates last night.
Hi, these are my grandmothers. Both of them suffered from diabetes and ultimately died of massive heart attacks. This is my mother. She suffers from diabetes and she's also had a heart attack. The statistics for women with heart disease are staggering. What I'd like to know is, how do each of you plan on addressing chronic disease and preventative health in your health care plans? I would like my mother to be around to see her grandchildren.
There's one clip from last night. Here's another, the Iraq War, a hot topic of debate. Also, one concerned military parent put the question in heated political terms.
As the mother of an American soldier deploying to Iraq for a second time, I would like to know if the perception is true that the Democrats are putting politics before conscience. How many more soldiers must die while these political games continue in our government? Is the reason that we are still in Iraq and seemingly will be for some time due to the Democrats' fear that blame for the loss of the war will be placed on them by the Republican spin machine?
Jack Beatty, how do you think activism related to the war or really anything played out last night and more generally, more broadly, is playing out on this internet campaign?
Well, I thought, you know, that those two questions showed, I think, the advantage of this medium. I mean, rather than just abstract persons suffering from medical problems, we saw a real person. We heard about, and we saw the, you know, her pictures of her grandmothers, and we saw her mother, and so it grounded in a real situation. And then the question about Iraq that woman asked, you know, that's the question the media never quite puts to them. These Democrats are afraid of having the blame for, quote, losing Iraq placed on them. The Republicans are hoping to do that. And as Dennis Kucinich and others have said, listen, we can just stop funding the war. But of course, that would in fact stop it. But if they do that, then they're going to have to face the Republican charge that they have lost the war. Mm. So in effect, they're doing what they can politically, but they're not acting as if they want to save that woman's son. And I think that kind of question from her, that's an example, I think, of what this medium can do. It charges it morally. She stays in your mind, and her indictment, it seems to me, of the party and of what they're doing just couldn't be clearer. Mm.
Julie Germany, there's some concern I've been hearing this morning in the blogosphere about who was actually choosing the viewer-produced questions. After all, CNN still acted as a filter last night, right?
That's right. There was still a gatekeeper making sure that the questions that were considered good and valuable got through and that everything else was left out. But in a way, CNN and YouTube had to have that arrangement. The candidates couldn't possibly answer all 3,000 questions. We're just not at the point yet where we can handle that. Maybe in the future we have the candidates sit down for a marathon question answering session.
Well, talk generally just for a minute about how technology is changing this presidential campaign, Julie.
YouTube has been one of the biggest phrases that people have attached to the 2008 presidential candidates in their campaigns. And that's because a lot of people looking at politics online see web video, as I mentioned before, as this incredibly personal medium. For the past several decades in politics, we've had what I like to call broadcast politics. It's been one message carefully crafted by the campaigns on behalf of their candidates. And that same message is on television, on radio, in the newspaper, and town hall meetings. Americans are sick of this one image of the candidates. They want a little more. They want to know more about the answers to questions that matter to them. They want to see candidates speak their own language. And YouTube, many people consider to be a way for the candidates to do that if they can take advantage of the medium, if they're willing to let go of their image a little bit, being airbrushed and blow-dried and coached to say exactly the right thing and look exactly the right way in the camera.
We're talking this hour about the YouTube debate and the super-wired nature of the 2008 presidential race. Joining us today from Washington is Julie Barco, Germany, Deputy Director of George Washington University's Institute for Politics, Democracy, and the Internet. And also with us is our own Jack Beatty, on-point news analyst and senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Let's listen a little more to the YouTube debate from last night. In one of the many unexpected questions, Senators Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were asked by a man named Jordan how they would address gender and race in the campaign.
Whenever I read an editorial about one of you, the author never fails to mention the issue of race or gender, respectively. Either one is not authentically black enough, or the other is not satisfactorily feminine. How will you address these critics and their charges if one or both of you should end up on the Democratic ticket in 08?
Senator Obama, how do you address those who say you're not authentically black enough? Hey, well, not my question. Jordan's question.
You know, when I'm catching a cab in Manhattan in the past, I think I've given my credentials.
Jack Beatty, that's a question you probably would not get it from a traditional journalist.
No, absolutely. And it's an excellent answer, although I see the Daily News is quoting cab drivers as being outraged at this. I mean, my God, if, let's be real here. Yeah. No, I thought that was a fine example of the kind of question. And you could even tell that he was sort of squirming with it. You know, it was, and of course, the journalist, Anderson Cooper, said, oh, of course, it's not my question. Yeah. But in fact, it is a question that black Americans have asked. Mm-hmm. And because of his, you know, his background, his mixed race background, his Hawaiian childhood, and so on. They've wondered that, and I thought his answer was very effective and grounded, my gosh, in the real experience of African Americans every day in this country.
Julie Barco, Germany, you brought us to this point. I want to come around to it again. In 2004, the internet was used mostly to raise money. Now it seems to be a social networking tool. Who is using it most effectively, would you say, Republicans or Democrats?
The Democrats have certainly been getting a lot of credit for producing social networking strategies this year that have pulled in hundreds of thousands of people. But if there's one lesson we learned from 2004, it's wait and see, because chances are the Republican strategists are watching exactly what the Democratic candidates are doing, and they're figuring out a way to take the typical Facebook and MySpace social networking strategy and make it their own. In 2004, we saw this happen with the Howard Dean campaign and the rise of meetups as a way for people to use the internet to meet each other locally and do something on behalf of the candidate. The Bush-Cheney campaign watched exactly what was going on, and they took that concept of the meetup, but they made it a strictly Bush-Cheney 2004 phenomenon. They brought it into their website. They could control it a little more, and by bringing it into their website, they were able to watch what people were doing and build their database.
I'd like to add another voice to the discussion at this point. Joining us now from Charleston, South Carolina, is Steve Grove, head of news and politics for YouTube, co-sponsor of the big debate last night. Welcome to you, Steve.
Hi, Jane.
From your perspective, last night a success?
Yeah, I think it really was. I mean, it put voters right at the center of the debate, and it broadened the platform from which the questions came from, you know? It used to be that you had to be in South Carolina or Iowa or New Hampshire to ask a question to the candidates, and, you know, with YouTube, you can beam your question in from anywhere in the country. In fact, all over the world, we saw questions come from Darfur last night, and have access, right to the candidates. And I think that's what's neat about this technology and why people have really taken a hold of it for politics is that it cuts away the middleman, and it allows voters to get straight to candidates, and likewise, candidates to get straight to voters.
They got straight to them, but you think they got straight answers?
Well, I think they got some straight answers. I think, certainly the candidates were polished as usual. I think some of the more straight answers came when there were personal questions. For example, who's your favorite teacher? Do you send your kids to public or private school? Would you agree to accept the minimum wage to take a job as president?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those were questions that you couldn't exactly give a stock answer to. And then I think some of the other questions as well kind of required that the political veneer, if you will, was pulled back a little bit. Asking Senator Clinton, how she responds to the idea that the Clinton dynasty and the Bush dynasty means that, both families have been in power for some 28 years, was a question that I don't know if a journalist would have asked that or not, but, she sort of had to answer it straight. I thought she handled it quite well, but, that's not a typical question, and I think she gave mm-hmm. the straightest answer she could.
Last night I heard Anderson Cooper say you received about 3,000 videos.
Yeah.
And how did you decide which videos to air?
Well, the editorial end of things came from CNN, so from the YouTube side of things, we did what we do best, which is collect questions, get people interested, come up with some of the formatting and sort of the flow of how the debate would run, and then CNN did the editorial stuff. So they made the question selections on their side.
And bloggers wanted to vote on which videos airs. Was that ever considered?
Well, this is the first time we've had a YouTube debate, and so I think for this one we wanted to make sure that that we took advantage of CNN's editorial skills, and so that's the direction we decided to go. I think in some ways, though, there may not have been voting directly by users through a voting system, but certainly compelling questions do bubble to the top anyway, and
mm-hmm.
so view counts were there to take into consideration, as were ratings, and CNN certainly looked at those things as they made their decisions.
Was there one topic that was particularly popular among your viewer questions? I heard healthcare was one.
Yeah, healthcare was really popular, and another issue that was very popular was education. We got
mm-hmm.
hundreds of questions on education, and what's interesting about that is several groups actually used this debate to get their issue onto the platform. So there was an organization called Great Schools that I think operates through the NEA, and they went out and got, I think over 70 questions submitted into the pool. I mean, this is 21st century political activism, trying to get your issue on the candidate's platform through, submitting questions to the debate on YouTube.
Lots of listeners, Steve, want to ask questions and have their comments about last night's debate. Brian is calling from Watertown, Massachusetts. Brian, go ahead.
Hello. Yes, I'd like to comment on the format. I thought it worked great. There were some definite moments of humor that you didn't really see when the experts asked the questions. And one of the books I'm reading right now is called The Wisdom of Crowds, and how when you sort of cast a wider net, you end up with sometimes better results than a small panel of experts. And I think you saw the effect of that in that some of the questions were really clever, again, really humorous. My question would be, because I know you had mentioned putting it out to a vote, and I would love to see people vote on which questions would be posed. But my question would be more, what was the candidate's reaction to this format? Because you could see them squirm for some of the questions, and I'm sure some of them went into this with a lot of trepidation. Mm. What was the reaction of the candidates to this format?
Good question, Brian. Thank you. Steve, I presume you were there. Were you watching, and can you give us the report?
Yeah, in fact, I was in the post-debate spin room and had a chance to speak to four or five of the candidates. Some of the lower-tier candidates like Mike Gravel and Dennis Kucinich really love YouTube because it's a chance for them to, kind of break into the political sphere without having to spend much money. But Joe Biden and Chris Dodd also really enjoyed the debate. I heard from Obama's folks. He really enjoyed it. He posted a video to YouTube saying that he thought it was a great format. Senator Clinton also had good things to say. She's been a very active user of YouTube.
Well, they probably would all say good things, but were they squirming when they got the questions, or was there some uncomfortability going into it?
Sure, up on stage. Yeah, well, I saw a little bit of squirming, but I also saw some nice, saw some candidates laughing and enjoying it as well. So, no one really knew what to expect. This is obviously a very new format. And so I did see a few moments where candidates paused longer than they might usually, but mm-hmm. there were just some nice nice moments of humor as well, I think. So,
did one candidate, Steve, receive more questions than another?
You know, I haven't tallied it up, but I would say it's likely that probably the top four candidates got a few more than others. Mm-hmm. But I'd say it's interesting, you know, Governor Richardson, who didn't get a question probably until, I don't know, it felt like maybe 15 minutes in,
yeah.
You know, I think he was the last candidate to get a question, really came, I thought, came well very well. He used the debate to really differentiate himself, you know, as a governor versus the other senators, and I know his team was quite happy with his performance.
And was it just me, or were there a lot of men asking questions?
There were a lot of men asking questions. I think if you look at the pool of 3,000, there were a lot of men submitting questions, too. So I think it matched pretty well what we got in, which, you know, in some ways matches the tech-interested population. Mm-hmm.
Chris is calling from New Haven, Connecticut. Chris, you're on the line. Hello.
Hi. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Sure.
My question was that, can you hear me?
Yes.
My question was, the number one video that was among users on YouTube was a question by LonelyGirl15 about impeachment, and that was completely ignored by CNN's editorial staff. And so with being like YouTube, the whole strength of the debate was based on, you know, making it out there for the people. And, you know, the national polls show what the interest in impeachment is, too. So it's not like a fringe question. Why was it ignored?
So the most popular YouTube video, Steve Grove from YouTube, was, Chris says, ignored, correct?
Actually, that's not correct. And it wasn't the most popular video on YouTube. There was a side site that I think was really a neat effort called Community Counts, where some users got together and said, let's vote on the questions and see which one we vote the best. And you're right, that a question from a girl who shouldn't be confused with the infamous Lonely Girl 15, but she uses two L's as her Lonely Girl alias. Anyway, she did ask a question on impeachment, but what's neat is Chris Dodd sat down, and I think Senator Edwards did as well afterwards, and answered that question. So the candidates, because, you know, your traditional debate happens for 2 hours on stage and it's done, but on YouTube it lasts forever,
mm-hmm.
and you can continue to answer questions as you go along. So, you know, John Edwards, Chris Dodd, they sat down and they answered some of those questions, some of the ones that were voted up on this community count site, and I think that you'll see candidates continue to do that in the coming weeks. You know, there's still 3,000 questions sitting there that people want answers to, and you don't have to have had them, you know, fit into the 2 hours on TV.
Such an extraordinary outpouring and interest in this, Steve. We're just at the beginning of this, the intersection between politics and the Internet. Where do you see it going in years to come?
Well, we really see this as flattening the political dialogue in the country. And, you know, as I mentioned before, kind of eliminating the middleman between candidates and voters. And, you know, what we really think and hope for in all of our programming is that it helps bring a level of authenticity to politics that I think both candidates and voters really want. There's something about video. It's a very tangible medium. Certainly there are gotcha moments like the infamous Macaca moment with George Allen and others that, you know, that bring a very real aspect to it. But I think also just the way that people communicate over video is very tangible and real and fits very well with politics. And I think, you know, voter-generated content is still that does the best. So it's a medium that, you know, certainly when YouTube was created just 2.5 years ago, the founders never considered that we would be having a presidential debate.
Well, which leads me to my next question, and I'll turn to Julie Germany at George Washington University. At some point, Julie, do you think you'll be able to actually make a link between voting or fundraising and watching a YouTube video of a candidate?
We would love to. Steve, if you're interested in doing a study, we would love to do this with you. You know, it's one question I've had a lot over the course of the past few months. How do we actually measure the impact of YouTube on this election? It remains to be seen, but it certainly has made it a much more fascinating election.
Steve Grove from YouTube, what was your favorite video last night?
What was my favorite video? You know, I thought, in all honesty, the video that surprised me most was the introductory video that kicked off the entire debate, where, you know, it was submitted on 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, just 6 or 7 hours before the deadline, that essentially said, hello, candidates, we hope you answer our questions straight, and I'll turn it over to you, Anderson. It just shows the creativity and the ingenuity of our users, and to come in that late and end up kicking off a live broadcast on CNN was pretty neat to see.
And it's not just YouTube, it's Facebook and MySpace. I mean, there are lots of these outlets, correct?
Yeah, there are, and I think candidates realize that they have to be on all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where the eyeballs are, and you know, on YouTube, hundreds of millions of videos are viewed a day, hundreds of thousands. are downloaded or uploaded a day. So that's sort of where the audience is. So you almost can't afford not to be there. And it's the same is true for Facebook and MySpace. I mean, this is sort of a 21st century grassroots political activism. And I think what's neat about it is it's tapping into people that might not have been interested in politics before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who, especially at this primary stage, who might not have been paying attention, with these applications, they can engage in the process early. They can find ways to communicate directly with the candidates, and you know, with a debate like last night, I mean, they can do so in a pretty high-profile way. So I think there's a group of people out there that may be disenchanted or a little bit separated from politics, but technology like this really lower the barrier to entry for them to come to the platform and engage.
Steve Grove is the head of news and politics for YouTube, the red-hot video-sharing website that co-sponsored last night's presidential debate. Steve, thanks so much for being with us. I'm sure we'll speak again.
Thanks, Jane.
Some of the YouTube video questions at last night's debate were downright goofy. Even so, some addressed some serious topics. Here's a snowman with a serious problem.
Hello, Democratic candidates. I've been growing concerned that global warming, the single most important issue to the snowmen of this country, is being neglected. As president, what will you do to ensure that my son will live a full and happy life?
Jack Beatty, a little bit of levity last night.
That's in the corny
category.
Category. And there a little professionalism of the elite journalist might have been wanting. But in general, you know, this was bottom up, and so much of our political discourse is controlled by media elites.
Yes.
And anything that shakes that dominance, I think, is to be desired. But you know, to get to this question of YouTube in the campaigns, it's a prying panoptic eye on these candidates. And on the one hand, it keeps them honest, macaca and so on. But on the other hand, it is going to inhibit them. And when they are spontaneous and are caught on YouTube, it's going to embarrass them. And people are going to be used. And then there'll be these, you know, these quotations, these visual quotations. Ah, gotcha. See John Edwards doing his hair and so on. But, you know, is that really telling us anything important? I think too much in television is the authority of surfaces. People believe in the surface. Surfaces made George Bush seem like a credible possibility as a candidate.
Let's listen a little more before we get into more conversation of the YouTube CNN debate last night. There were more than a few colorful characters who were appearing in videos shown to the candidates. Here was one memorable one, a singing cowboy with a few complaints.
This here's a two-part question. Pay taxes on my clothes and food. Pay taxes on my place. Pay taxes on my moisturizer. I mean, taxes on my weights. Pay taxes on my land. Every year y'all make me pay. I paid a tax on this guitar so I could sing for you today. My taxes put some kids through college I can't afford to send myself. Now tell me, if you were elected president, what would you do to help? Also, I got a parking ticket last week. Could one of y'all pardon me?
Singing has been a big part of the online campaign so far. I want to bring in another voice to our conversation. Joining us from Philadelphia is Leah Kaufman, a senior at Temple University, a freelance songwriter and the singer behind the Obama Girl video that has been an internet sensation. A model lip-synced her song in the video, but the voice of Obama Girl is all Leah's. Leah, nice to have you with us.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me.
What prompted this video that, as of last night, I saw had 2.6 million hits on YouTube?
Well, we made a parody of another song back in January called My Box in a Box. And this time we wanted to do something a little more original, and we thought politics would be, you know, a great route for us. So that's why we really decided to make an Obama song.
And the reaction beyond the extraordinary number of views that you've had?
It's amazing. It's great.
Such as what?
Oh, excuse me?
Such as what? From the campaign itself?
Oh, have we had a response from the campaign?
Yeah.
No, we have not. But from fans and supporters of Obama, they really like the video and the song.
Let's listen to part of it. This is Leah Kaufman from BarelyPolitical.com, a website that financed this video shoot titled Obama Girl.
You tell the truth unlike the right. You can love, but you can fight. You can borrow me tonight. I got a crush on Obama.
won't you pick up your phone? Cause I got a crush on Obama.
Leah Kaufman, there are some people who say this is popular and hip, this video with the younger crowd, but perhaps a turnoff and even in some ways damaging to candidate Obama in places like the Midwest. Do you think about that?
No, I don't agree with that. I think that, you know, in today's kind of celebrity-driven world, that this will only help raise awareness of his campaign.
Did you do it for that purpose? Was that your intent?
No, that wasn't our intent. Our intent was to kind of follow candidates onto the internet, because they're using all this new media to communicate, and you know, it's only appropriate that political satire follow these candidates there.
Mm-hmm. What do you watch when you go online? You produce this highly, you know, popular video. What are you looking for when you go online as a young person out there in political age?
I mean, when I go online, I look for interesting blogs. You know, I shop online. I do. I mean, people of my generation do everything online.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Well, Leah Kaufman, I appreciate your time. Thanks for being
sure.
with us. And
no problem.
Good luck to you in the future studying at Temple University.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's go to the phones. George is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I hate to sound possibly like a wet blanket, but and I'm of an older generation, so it may sound somewhat like sour grapes. I'm really not interested in humor or funny things and songs in promoting candidates. I'm interested in hearing their real views, and I don't believe, in terms of the actual visual aspects, last night on my TV, I saw very unclearly the picture provided by the people calling in on YouTube, and I couldn't hear all of the questions that they posed. And I don't particularly appreciate singing questions or humorous questions or what have you. Mm. I want to hear the real views, and I don't really believe we got any kind of depth out of the format. And that's not necessarily YouTube's problem. I think the whole format itself doesn't really provide the answer. I want to hear real, somewhat in-depth views on medical health, on education, and other things. Mm.
George, thank you for your call. I appreciate your perspective. Jack Beatty, last night's debate, not for everyone. Is there any forum where you can get what George wants? And that's an in-depth look at the issues.
We all want that, and yep. I don't think we got that at all last night. But part of that is just the size, you know, of the field. Everybody's got a minute, a second, a couple of seconds to respond, and Anderson Cooper cracked the whip very, very fast last night, and people complained about that. And, you know, I think the sotto voce conversation in an earlier debate between Edwards and Hillary about wouldn't it be great if we could cut this field down and just have a debate among the few of us. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are going to be asking that, people like George, when they're not getting the kind of back and forth, cross-examination that brings out the contradictions in the candidates' positions. But you know, on the other hand, I don't even think we got anything much more in much more depth in the other debates where it's been professional journalists. Mm. It didn't seem to me we had a. It's not so. I can't see a qualitative difference there.
Julie Barco, Germany, playing to a younger, hipper crowd. These candidates, is it all about style, not necessarily substance?
It should still be about substance. Certainly. I agree with Jack. Do we ever get any kind of depth out of a debate? I think that's a very good point. People are expecting something a little different these days. They're not looking for politics as usual. And as much as we like to say that people are really after the substance, on some level, songs and jokes and very short clips of talking work for people. You know, the internet is probably a really good place for candidates to engage in some of this deeper dialogue about the issues that they care about and that people care about. Mm.
Chuck is calling from Williamsville, New York. Chuck, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Jane. My question is, how does this debate appear to foreign people who live in outside the United States?
Mm-hmm. Good question, Chuck. Thank you for your call. Jack Beatty, how does it look to the rest of the world, this kind of show that we put on last night in this country?
I don't know, but I can imagine people saying this is sort of populist Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the you know, every person his or her own movie star, and that it lowers the tone, that it makes what is already to many foreign viewers the spectatorial character of our politics. It underlines that even more. So I can imagine there would be some lifting of eyebrows abroad. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Jared is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Jared, hi, you're on the line.
Hi, Jane. How are
hi.
You?
Hi, good.
I just wanted to comment, rewinding a little bit. We were talking before about whether or not the media was too much of a gatekeeper, or if this debate format really changed the lay of the land here and allowed the public to really reach out to the candidates as individually as possible. And I just wanted to say that I think what we saw last night was a perfect combination of the two. Anderson Cooper, I thought, did an incredible job of making these candidates answer the questions as directly as possible, which was something that we all saw these individual YouTube posters almost demanded, sort of saying we're sick of hearing these candidates in whatever form it is, whether it's Meet the Press or on a debate, just read their talking points and not really answer the question. And if anything, I hope that this could lead to some re-engagement of, I think, a public that has grown pretty tired of what we've seen out of campaigns and coverage in the last couple cycles. And I'll leave it to the panel to discuss. Thank you very much.
Jared, thank you. Jack Beatty, you want to jump in?
Well, this business of answering the question, I understand that, and I was especially struck with Hillary Clinton's remembering people's names. Mm-hmm. She always addressed people by name. But Jared, my feeling also is that sometimes it's less important to answer the question than for the candidate to get across his or her position. After all, we're voting for the position. We want to know what they think about what their main platform is, what their candidacy is about. And if they're always asking the question, they may not get around to their essential message. I think, for example, John Edwards hasn't been asked about poverty. Mm-hmm. He hasn't, he's made
poverty tour.
Fighting poverty a central part of his campaign. I have yet to see someone say, what are the three things we need to do to fight poverty? And again, I want to hear that, and voters should hear it. They're not getting it from these, because if you answer the question and that isn't one of the questions, then your own campaign, I think, is slighted.
Hmm. Julie Germany, we've talked about the YouTube format, how that's changed things. Talk a little bit about mobile technology as it relates to these political campaigns, this so-called viral marketing and the importance of that.
Sure. Well, one of my favorite moments last night was Kucinich's web video where he asked the public to text the word peace. Mm-hmm. And in all of my excitement writing about what was going on last night, I neglected to text the word peace to Dennis Kucinich. And I wish I had, because I'd have more to talk about. But really what we're seeing here is the use of mobile technology in politics in the United States. Mobile technology has been used as a tool in politics throughout the rest of the world to mobilize support, to advertise for a candidate, to turn people out to vote. So now Kucinich took his little 30-second platform to get people to text into him. And oh, by the way, by opting in, first of all, people are taking an action, which is, I think, very important. They're taking an action, whether they support you or not, they're doing something. And second of all, this allows the campaign to collect very important information about people watching the debate and people who might be potential Kucinich supporters and donors.
Jack, good point. Jack Beatty, does this YouTube generation of campaigning invite a new kind of scrutiny, if you will, for these candidates? It seems more open and free-flowing, but are there downsides?
Well, yeah, I was trying to get at this earlier, that if they're always being looked at, it could, I for all its openness, it could have just the opposite effect. That candidates will stay inexorably on message. They won't dare do anything out of the ordinary or spontaneous because of the prying eye and it really I think that's a real we want to see them more, we want to understand their gaffes and so on, but these things can be magnified so out of proportion because they can be seen. And again, the authority of the visual and surfaces, I'm not sure that's where we don't need any more of that, I think, in our politics.
John Edwards has been talked a lot about this combing of his hair in front of the mirror that's been appearing on YouTube. Julie, Germany, is there anything that campaigns can do to control that, to control what's said about them online? I guess not.
Campaigns can't control it. I mean, that's the straight answer. Campaigns can't control it. But what they can do is learn how to live with it a little better. Instead of letting it make you more inhibited, laugh at it, shrug at it, and then get over it and move on. John McCain did just that when bomb, 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 bomb Iran hit the internet. Instead of, avoiding the issue, instead of attacking the people who made it, he just said, get a life, and moved on with his campaign.
Will the YouTube format, this question to both of you as we wrap up this hour, become a catalyst for sort of a broader conversation, especially online? Even if you don't like the format, if you don't agree that we're not getting depth out of it, is it a catalyst for a broader conversation about politics and about candidates generally? Julie German, you want to start?
Well, personal questions require personal answers, not talking points. It's a different type of discussion and a different type of debate. We didn't quite see that level of discussion last night. We almost saw it. But, again, this is a new environment. People don't want the same old talking points that have been carefully crafted for candidates by people they pay big bucks to consult on the campaign. They want something a little bit more interesting and authentic.
Is this the beginning of a broader conversation on many fronts, Jack Beatty?
Well, Al Gore thinks it is. In his new book, The Assault on Reason, he says, this top-down privately owned networks, mega businesses, they have controlled the proscenium of American politics. And through interactivity, through YouTube, through other ways, he argues we have a new kind of information, bottom up, and he sees that as a way to revive American politics. I don't go that far, but he makes a very good case that the direction of information and who controls it, anything that takes it out of the hands of these networks and cable institutions, I think is probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Jack Beatty, our On Point news analyst, senior editor at The Atlantic Monthly, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
And Julie Barco, Germany, Deputy Director, Institute for Politics, Democracy, and the Internet at George Washington University. Thank you to you as well, Julie. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
We're going to go out now on another web video hit, a follow-up spoof to the original Obama Girl video called Obama Girl versus Giuliani Girl, again by Leah Kaufman. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. Enjoy. This is On Point. We're gonna take the primary and then defeat Giuliani.